Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the NAWA Wrestling Connection. I am your host, Tony the Godfather Capone, with my co-host and play-by-play NAWA commentator, Tony T. Tony, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Tony. How's everything?
I'm doing great, man. I hate being left on hold. I mean, don't you try to use the buttons over there? What's going on, my man?
Hey, we just figured out. First run-through.
Well, this is actually season two. This is our second season of Wrestling Connection. I'm excited to be on and really excited to see what you can bring to the table as my co-host. You think you can handle it?
I think I can. We're getting my first episode jitters out of the way, so I think we're going to be good from here on out.
I know when you're around me, you always get nervous. That's okay. I'm used to that. I remember in Jingle Brawl, you got nervous being around me. I mean, just got to calm down. Just be yourself, you know?
Yeah, I feel it. It takes time to getting used to the business.
Well, anyway, long story short, just let me fill you in real fast. We just came off of Jingle Ball a couple of weeks ago. We've been off because of the holiday, and we're back on live. And we got a lot of things going on with the NAWA. Recently, we just started a new division, which is going to be NAWA Starlet, which is going to be quite a few professional female wrestlers debuting in the NAWA. And that should be starting very soon. We did have to cancel our show in North Carolina temporarily for a future date due to the COVID restrictions. The state has given us the future dates once the state is open, at least to 25%, which will be like 2,000 people in that arena. So we are going to be going back to the Dorton Arena in North Carolina in the near future. We're just waiting for the pandemic, hopefully to pass us by sooner than later. So, that's going on great, and we're going to be making a major announcement later on tomorrow, in regards to we're finally back on track. We're starting April 17th down in Florida, and we're doing our first, TV taping, and we're getting ready for our TV show that's going to be coming out, both on YouTube, on Fight TV, and we're just continuing from there. And we also have four other pay-per-view events coming out between now and the end of the year, so things are looking up great behind the scenes. I'm pleased of the position we're at. We had great buys overall for pay-per-view, although the live event was a little bit weak in general, but I'm still proud that we were able to, or the NAWA was able to relaunch in the second wave of the pandemic. And, it's great. We're getting great response from the fans, and they're waiting for the product. But I hear that you had a special guest tonight that I wasn't aware of until earlier today. So can you fill me in on what's going on tonight?
Well, yeah, we have an extremely huge show planned for everyone here tonight. You know, we're going to be talking about the NAWA. That's what the Wrestling Connection is all about. But we're also going to be sitting down with an ECW legend, one half of the Pitbulls. And if anybody knows this man, he's one of the nicest men out there. And he's one of the greater wrestlers that ECW had in their tag team division. And without further ado, say that again.
I don't know. Well, let me stop you there. I don't know how nice of a guy you think it is. I mean, you're new to the business, but let me tell you something. He's one of the baddest motherfuckers in the business, one of the toughest guys I've ever seen. And to be honest with you, I just seen through our YouTube channel yesterday a iconic match with the Pitbulls with Jim Cornette versus Public Enemy. And I can't wait to really talk to him about that, because that was an incredible night. And my phone was ringing off the hook today in regards to really asked me if this is really Gary Wolf, you know, the actual Pitbull himself here. So if you can, Anthony, please, let's get the introduction going and let's get him on. I have a lot of questions for him also.
Without further ado, we welcome one half of the Pitbulls to the NAWA Wrestling Connection, Gary Wolf. Gary, can you hear us? How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you guys doing?
Good. That's great to hear. Gary, welcome to the program. It's really great to have you.
Thank you. I didn't know this was your anniversary show, but thanks for having me on.
Gary, it's been a long time since we've seen each other, man. I'll tell you, you're an iconic legend in this business, and your contributions, your accolades, I bow down to you. I mean, you've really done so much in this business and, you know, really brought wrestling to the forefront and, you know, that whole ECW Extreme, legendary. And for you to be a part of it, man, it's like, wow. And it's been an honor to have you work with the NAWA back in the days and, you know, some great fights that we have back then also. So, so I'm going to turn it over to Tony. I know he's going to have some questions for you and just find out some background about you in general. So, Tony, if you want, please continue from there. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I always do that.
No, you're fine. You're
nice.
Good. So, Gary, obviously, Tony and myself, we know who you are. You're a former ECW World Tag Team Champion, former television champion, and you're a member of the Hardcore Hall of Fame. Doesn't have a lot of members, but you're one of those members, you know, at the 2300 Arena, which we will get into later on in the programming. But on top of that, you've won championships and have competed all over the world. So tell us, how did a person from right next to us in New Jersey get into the professional wrestling business?
We used to work for Tony, which was great, just so you know that, brother. We always had good matches at your place. Where we got in the business was I had businesses on the boardwalk in Wildwood, New Jersey. And I had, you know, like Italian ice cars and, you know, cheesesteak place outside on the beach and stuff like that. And one day we were in the gym and the gym guy that owned the place said where wrestling was going to Wildwood, and they were actually taping at the Wildwood Convention Center at that time. And they would take the TV. So we snuck in there Monday afternoon because we were going to be working Monday night as security, that's all. You know, we had nothing to do with the business, you know. We weren't even thinking about ever even joining the business. We had no clue. And we see this ring in there, and there was four of us, me, my partner, Anthony, Crybaby Waldo, believe it or not, was with us, and the Leatherface, Andy Bernalski, a good friend of mine who plays the Leatherface in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We were there, and Dick Worley was, like, hanging out in the stands just watching. And we didn't know what the fuck we were doing. We just beat the shit out of each other. We didn't even know how to bump. We had no clue. So I remember Dick Worley, though, telling Andy Bernalski, like, he was so big, like, you're the next Hulk Hogan, bro. You should do this. And Andy was like, fuck no, man. This is like, it hurt. So I couldn't work out for 2 weeks after that. And I was like, man, fuck that business. It's too rough, man. Too rough. And I don't know, a month went by and the summer was creeping down. And I remember Anthony said, I'm going to go to school. So he went to the Monster Factory, and then a month later I joined, and that's pretty much how we started, man. Once we got to the Monster Factory, 2 years later, we could have worked for Vince McMahon if we wanted to. We could have worked for Japan if we wanted to, and we decided to go to Japan first. We were already working for ECW. We were in ECW when it was Tri-State Wrestling Alliance. It wasn't even ECW yet. There's very few guys that have been there that long, you know.
So you're actually talking even before Eastern Championship Wrestling, Tri-State. I mean, that's way, way, way back in the late 80s, if I'm correct.
Yeah, I was working for $15 at that point. You know what I mean? We were real green and, you know, we were actually going up and working for Vince for a little bit too, just to do some jobs, and before you know it, Vince gave us a job in North Carolina, and that was the late 80s. And that's when Japan started knocking on our door, and we were actually getting ready to go work for Vince. I mean, we were on the road 6 days a week in North Carolina, Charlotte. So it was cool. We worked out at and trained at the Dragon, Ricky Steamboat's gym, every day. He let the boys work out there for free. So it was pretty cool. We always seen Flair in there training.
Anthony, question for you. You talked about the iconic, you know, Larry Sharp, the Monster Factory in Jersey, and there was so much talent on the East Coast that came out of the tri-state area. But actually, like in your era, when you were there at the Monster Factory, what other guys were associated with the Monster Factory that went on to become either, you know, decent independent stars or major stars? Who was out of, like, your class back in those days from the Monster Factory?
When I first started at the factory, Bammer was just leaving it. Bear, who played Papa Shango in The Godfather, he was still there. The Big Mummy was there. Pretty much then it was just me and Anthony. I mean, that's when that's when Larry pretty much started saying, I'm going to manage you guys, you know, and boom, next thing you know, we meet Don Morocco, start going to New Zealand, boom, we meet King Curtis. Next thing you know, we're flying out to New Zealand to wrestle the British Bulldogs. So that was our first trip ever out of the country, was to go to New Zealand and wrestle the British Bulldogs in front of 55,000 people at the Olympic Stadium there. It was pretty cool, man. And I got 2 weeks with them. You know, that experience. I remember I went back against them again. I went back against the Guerrero brothers, which was Eddie Guerrero's dad, and Rey Mysterio's dad. So we got to really work guys that helped us get better and better and better, which made us good because the difference between us and other tag teams was, if you're Mexican, we can wrestle your style. If you're from Japan, we can wrestle your style. Puerto Rico, we can wrestle that style. Vince McMahon, we can wrestle that style. If you want us to be extreme, we can do that as well. So that worked with other people. Like the Wild Samoans, Afa and Sika loved us because we were easy with them. They're older guys, and, you know, Cowboy Bob Wharton would hook us up and always put in a good word for us, you know, especially if there was a tour. Like once we, Beefcake and Snuka were a tag team up in Germany, and they just called, you know, they told the booker we want to bring the Pitbulls. So they brought us for 2 weeks, which was an honor to work with Jimmy Snuka, you know. And Brutus and the Barber Beefcake, it was, you know. But Brutus just came back from major surgery, and he still trusted us. You know, he's like, just don't hit me in the face. I was like, no problem, brother, you know. Business is a lot different now than it was back then.
Totally different nowadays. But, yeah, I know, Anthony, you sound like you're a little bit speechless, but, you know, continue asking Gary. I know you were really intrigued when we first talked about him coming on board. What else you got for Gary, my man?
Yeah, you know what? I could just sit here all day and keep my mouth shut and listen to the stories because it's very rare you get to hear stories like this, you know, from
the mouth. A lot of people don't know, like, the people I've been in the ring with. I mean, I would do 45 minutes with Justin Lager. 45 minutes, bro. Easy. I mean, I wrestled Hase, Sasaki, Master Chono, Master Saito, Honda. Guys that people today dream that they would have gotten the ring with them. Masawa, Hayabusa. You know what I'm saying? It was just the perfect time for us, you know? Like, it was we had Japan knocking on our door and Vince, and Japan just gave us a better deal, you know, at the time. So that's what we took, and then we were able to work for ECW because we were in ECW. We were a tag team champion before it was Extreme and before it was Eastern. We had the belts in TWA, man, as the champs. So I can't even count how many times we had the straps. If you want to really count how many times we had them in ECW originally, it'd be up there.
Now, did you ever think about doing? I'm sorry to interrupt. Let me ask you a question, Gary. Did you ever think about doing singles competitions when you first started, or was there just a special attraction with you and Anthony, and then you just decided, like, hey, we want to go into it? And how did you develop the whole Pitbull character between you guys, which was iconic?
He started before me. He started a month before me, so I had to get the money together, some cash together. Because back then, you know what I mean, like, it cost $3,000 to go to school. But Larry, you know, he was the kind of guy that he would work with you. You know, if you had, like, he'll give you a tryout, and he could tell whether you have it or not just by the tryout.
Right.
He knew we had it. So he's like, come up with $500 and make payments. And we were like, okay, cool, you know. And then next thing you know, we became his dog, you know, and pretty much, you know. And I was actually breeding pit bulls back then. I lived in Philadelphia, and that's what I did. I always did that. And finally, one of our favorite tag teams were the British Bulldogs, of course, Art Foundation, of course. But when it came down to it, we were short. And he was 5'10", probably 5'10 and a half with lifts, and I was probably about 5'10". With lifts too, so we, like, you know, we were, I'm only 5'9", he was like 5'10 and a half. You know, the Bulldogs were able to pull it off. Let's do it a little bit more hardcore. We'll call ourselves the Pit Bulls, and it just clicked. I mean, it worked out. You know, the gimmick worked out, the spikes worked out, the leather worked out. A lot of people, I mean, to this day, would say that we look like somewhat. Not the Road Warriors, but kind of like the Road Warriors, kind of like Demolition. We always had spikes, and we always had leather, and we always had chains.
Did you and Anthony think that if you guys stayed in the WWE or WWF at the time a little bit longer, that you would have got to that point as the Demolition, the Road Warriors inside that company? I know in ECW, you guys are tag team champions. You guys are one of the best tag teams of all time there. But do you think you would have got to that level in the WWF?
Yeah. Yeah, they were grooming us good in North Carolina. But they brought us down there as babyfaces. And honestly, we sucked as babyfaces. At the time, we were still green, you know. We went to school in 1988 and down south, and they want us to be babyfaces because we were young and we looked, our bodies looked good, and we're like, you know, we're natural heels, bro. You know what I mean? I'm not breaking your balls, but I'm being serious. But they didn't care. You know, Paul Jones and George Scott was like, look, you guys are we're working Monday to fucking Saturday. I don't want to hear shit about it. You're baby faces, you know? And we just kept doing it. Next thing you know, here comes Nasty Boys. They started coming down there working because they were still green. And finally, you know, after talking to George Scott and begging him, I said, I know it's expensive, your film that you're using there, but can you please just videotape us, cut one promo. I said, give me a time and we'll cut it, and I'm telling you, just give us one chance, please. So finally, after months and months of just deliberating, he finally said, go ahead. And we cut this fucking one promo. He gave us a minute and 30 seconds. We nailed it perfectly. And his jaw was on the ground. I was in shock, but he was in shock. But it worked out perfect. He turned around and said, the Nasty Boys are now the heels. I mean, the baby faces and the Pit Bulls are heels. And they put us with the Stud Stable, which was with Robert Fuller and Matt Bourne at the time, and U.S. Mail, who ended up becoming the firefighter in WCW back in the day. He was in our little clique, which was cool because we got to go to Tennessee. You got to work with guys. That's when I first met Jerry Lynn, was in Tennessee. We were on the road working together.
Now, you know, we're spoken about your time in the WWF, and then you got New Japan, and you get to ECW before it's even ECW. And you won the World Television Championship, if I'm not mistaken. How was that experience?
I don't want to forget that Tony was asking me something. I want to get to that question that he was asking. We could have stayed because what happened was Gorilla Monsoon loved us. And God bless his soul, man. He's a New Jersey guy. He's fucking seen us. He saw our matches. We did about 10 matches there and against every single tag team. And then when they finally watched us against the Heart Foundation, and that's when they put it in their heads that they were going to bring us in. And that's what they were doing. They were bringing us in for WrestleMania against the Heart Foundation. And at the time, like I said, at the same time, fucking Japan gave us a fucking unbelievable deal, and we had to take it. You know what I mean? At the time, it was like, you know, take this and you're home a lot, or work, get ready to work 300 and something days a year, you know? And I didn't know if we could do that, you know what I mean? Like, we did it, we were young back then, you know? So down south, it was no problem, and it was really easy work because you're working every single night, you know?
Did you ever regret not taking a WWF contract and, you know, passing up on Japan?
Yeah, I regret it. I should have. We were asked two or three different times, different occasions. The last time we were hoping to get signed, but I think they just did it to break our balls because we said no twice. But we were getting signed with WCW anyway. We had already made our deal with WCW. And then Vince bought both companies, and there goes that. You know, we were pretty much screwed after that. But, yeah, we should have said one, at least to the one deal, because that would have really got us over on television. And back then, at those days, it would have made a big difference. Like, we'd be probably in the Legends right now. Definitely. Legends, or we'd be in the Hall of Fame. Because I don't care what anybody says, we've been everywhere we've been, we've held every single tag team title, from Puerto Rico to Australia to New Zealand. To, like, I don't care where we've been, we've offered a chance. I mean, we lived in Australia for 9 months, pulling 13s on TV. We had the belts. You know, the Bruce brothers were there, the Samoans were there, the Headhunters were there. I mean, you have some vicious tag teams there. We had the belts. Males was the heavyweight champion. Was a hardcore championship wrestler in Australia. We had it made there, dude. Unbelievable.
What about one of those countries that you guys like working in the most? Australia, Puerto Rico, Japan? Any of those countries giving you any memorable moments?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Puerto Rico has always been great. You know what I mean? If you worked for Carlos Colon, he took really good care of us. And we had their straps for a while. But Australia, I loved living in Australia, especially in Melbourne. It was sweet. It was really nice. You know, we had 4 nights. We would fly, you know, we would work, let's see how we did it, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday TV back in Melbourne. So we would do Sydney, Adelaide, Brisbane, back to Melbourne TV. And then we would show for 3 days in Melbourne. So that was pretty cool. And we had the key to the city, pretty much, man. Every fucking casino gave us VIP cards. And, I mean, if we wanted to go eat a fucking surf and turf or filet mignon or whatever we wanted to eat, man, we had it for us. We just walked in, ordered food, and we didn't pay nothing. Not a dime, man. It was crazy.
No, it seemed like they treated you guys well. And they should, because you guys went all over the world, ended up there as one of the places before you guys finished wrestling. But I want to get into your singles career a little bit. Now, you won the ECW television championship, and then you started a little bit of a feud with the Tasmaniac, Taz, who everybody knows is right now. He actually works in AEW. So what was the journey like getting into the title picture, ultimately winning it, and then getting into a feud with somebody that became a big name around the world, as you did, and is still a big name in AEW and Impact for a little bit, WWF?
Yeah, well, he was going to – well, when I was started my angle with him in 94 when I first got into came back to ECW, I just got back from a tour to Japan, and I'm sitting on my couch, and fucking, here we go, ECW's on television. I'm like, what? So I was like, hell yeah. So I called Sandman up, who's a longtime friend, that was not even a wrestler until he saw me at Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, and I got him connected to go to a wrestling school. And that's Nino, you know, he's the Sandman. I'm like, this is great. So I called him and Todd Gordon because they're friends of mine. And I said, I'm back in New Jersey. I said, I came back from Japan. I said, I'm looking for some work. And they're like, come on down to the building. So I went down. I met Paul Heyman. Eddie Gilbert was just leaving at that point. So there was still a lot of veterans still there, which was great, like Jimmy Snuka and guys like that, Don Morocco. And, you know, there's a lot of guys went through ECW, people don't realize, big names. So I don't know, Paul just, you know, said, yeah, hang out and I'll think of something. So I'd show up every weekend, and one weekend he said, all right, get dressed. So he saw me, and every time he seen me, he was just like, holy shit, because I just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Because you got to remember, I was rehabbing my knee anyway from Japan, so I was really working out hard in the gym. And at the time, I put a lot of size on. So finally, you know, at the time, Anthony was in Germany still. You know, he's in Germany working for Otto Lotz, his name was at the time. And I said, Ant's not here yet, but when he gets back in town, I want him to come in, and we want to put the pit bulls back together again, because now this company's actually starting to look really good, you know. So I went in there, and he's like, all right, tonight I want you to work somebody, and then this week I want you to come to New York, because we're going to cut some promos. And, like, I never even cut a promo in front of Paul. Like, so I don't know if he knew I can cut a promo or not. So he, I took a ride. I went to New York, and we're at the studio, which was a small little house that these two Italian guys were living in, which were cool as hell. And they were like, all right, we got to cut a promo. You know, we want you to go against JT Smith, and it's for the television title. And I'm like, I looked at Paul, and I'm like, what do you mean for the television title? I said, am I going to put him over? He's like, no, actually, we're going to put the belt on you. And I looked at him, like, more confused than anything. I was like, I don't want that belt, man. I said, I'm a tag team. I didn't know what I was talking about. And he came outside and brought me outside. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm giving you the television title. Do you understand how many people, just the names alone, that have had this belt and that are going to have it? This is going to be a special thing. He goes, think about this. You know, just take the belt. I'll run some angles with you and somebody else, and, you know, and at least you could say you had it, you know. And then when Anthony's in here, believe me, I won't go back on my word. You guys are tagged up. You're my boy. I said, okay. And I took it. And he ran with it, man. I had 20 minutes of television on ECW for a while, man, because I had that belt for, you know, I'm not saying super long, but I had it for a few months easy. And he put me over everywhere. I mean, Taz would be 1, 2, 3 in the middle of the ring everywhere we went. Everywhere. I beat him on TV at the arena. 1 through 3 in the middle of the ring. So his gimmick at that time, the Tasmanian Devil, was not getting over. It was too cartoonish. So for me at the time, you know, Paul's like, all right, it's time to switch. You know, we're going to give it to this kid, Mikey Whipwreck. And I'm like, no problem, you know. I said, why don't you have, since you're changing Taz's gimmick to Taz now, T-A-Z, not Tasmanian. This is Taz, Peter being Pete himself, miserable, always miserable. And that's how Taz is. That's how he always was. So he took everything real serious, and he was, like, always miserable. So that's the character they gave him. I had him come out, and Paul let us do a little bit of our own booking at the same time, which was great for us. So I just had him interfere, took a nut shot, let Mikey Whipwreck over me, so he became the ECW television champion, which was great because nobody in their right mind thought that he would even win, not alone. I mean, I rode around the town beating him in every single town we were in for like 3 or 4 months before we even had the match. So it was, you know, working them guys and working Stevie a lot. They were really pushing me at that point. You know, they were making me just everybody do jobs. So that was cool. I mean, and it was even better yet when Ant came there. And I mean, I did break my neck, which sucked, but I survived, bro, and I'm still working. And gave my partner a chance, Anthony, a chance to get the TV title, and he did. You know, and he had some unbelievable match. you know, especially that four-way. Anthony, Pitbull 2, Too Cold Scorpio, Shane Douglas, Chris Jericho. What a fucking match that was.
Gary, if I could just touch on a second. You were just talking about Taz, and actually I was looking at some old footage from when Taz, some of his earlier matches when he was with the NAWA, before even ECW, when he was the Tasmanian Devil. And he was managed at the time by great, God rest his soul, Tony Rumble, Boston Bad Boy himself. Did you ever work with Tony Rumble at all, or did you know Tony at all?
Yeah, I met him a few times back in the day. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he was a real class act. And, yeah, I mean, used to come out with the dog collar and Taz's match, you know, Taz's neck as the Tasmanian Devil. And great, I mean, great, even as a manager, a great guy. I mean, just in general, just curious if you ever went there. But, yeah, I mean, Taz was always Taz, but we're not here to talk about him. We're really talking about you and Anthony and Wick and your career. It's just phenomenal. I'm actually looking right now at the match that was just on TV yesterday that we put out on YouTube with you and Anthony with Jim Cornette against you know, two of my former buddies, you know, Ted Petty and Johnny Grunge, Public Enemy. And All Out Ladders, fucking shopping carts and great, got great response from it. And I'll tell you, that show we did at the County Center sold out, 4,000 people. They still talk about it today. And we got great response in the last 24 hours with you coming on the show and highlighting one of your matches in the NAWA. And I don't know if you remember that particular night in general, but you know, you might.
No, I remember that very, 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 very good, believe me.
Yeah, I mean, at that time, that was actually May of 99. ECW was going through a lot of changes, and at that point, on that particular show, actually, that's when we brought in Shane Douglas as our champion, and he was actually ECW champion that Sunday, and I cut a deal with him and had him come in, and, you know, under a mask, I think it was Tiger Mask, if I'm correct, and ended up winning our belt that night, and you know, we ended up having Tony DeVito, who started his first match ever in the business against Mario Mancini with my company. And, you know, Tommy Dream. I mean, we just had so many guys that started back with the NAWA that ended up being in ECW. But I think I got a special place in my heart both for Ted Petty and Johnny Grunge, man. Great guys. I know you know him through the business. And I'm actually watching that match now.
I met Teddy when I was 18 or 19 when I was getting in the business. I mean, he was the Cheetah Kid. I used to wrestle him when he was the Cheetah Kid. Yeah.
I mean, always working out. I mean, just really probably one of the early high flyers at his time. I mean, he was really, like, incredible. And I had met him down in Brooklyn years ago, and I think it was actually 88 or around 88 or so when I first met. And believe it or not, I used to use his ring. I used to rent out his rings for, you know, my early shows back in the days, you know, in the early, early days, man.
Yeah.
It was a club.
Yeah. That was a very good night. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. That was a very good night because I remember we had Jim Cornette as our manager. And when you work with Jimmy, you know, he wants everything perfect. You know, he's business straight down the book, you know.
I'd like to ask you a personal question, if it's not too personal, but, you know, I know the show is about you, but, you know, can you talk about your relationship with Anthony in general? You know, God rest his soul, man. I miss him every day, and classic wrestler. I mean, what a wrestler. I mean, just hands down. I mean,
he was a beast, bro. He was a beast. Yeah, we went to school together.
I remember about Anthony personally. I mean, you know, both of you guys, you know, on stage, you guys are like some of the toughest SOBs, but he was really such a great-hearted guy. I mean, just really give the fucking shirt off your back. I mean, really down to earth, you know, that old-school attitude, if you want to say, you know?
Yeah, because we were treated that way, and he was always like, he would want to do the same thing, especially if young guys are coming up and they would ask a question. You know, he would always sit them down and straight up, not lie. You know, when we were younger, You know, we were lucky. We had Terry Funk and Stan Hansen in the dressing room, and it was just us and them. It was one other time. It was Ric Flair and Abdullah the Butcher. You know, and they're teaching us shit. You know, we asked Stan Hansen to watch our match. He's like, "Fuck, what I want to watch your fucking match, kid." I'm like, "All right, you know, okay." And then next thing you know, he's like, "You know, you watch this match," and we watched it. And believe it or not, we learned a lot of shit. You know, those old school guys were just way different. You know, it was just way different back then. Ted Penny was one of them. I mean, you gotta remember, I mean, when he passed away, he was in his 50s, late 50s, and he was still in great shape. And I mean, like I said, I used to work with him as the Cheetah Kid. I mean, I was a kid. I wasn't even able to drink yet, dude.
Yeah, it's a shame how he passed away, and so many guys that we knew passed away at such a young age, you know. One thing or another, but yeah. Let me just touch on a second before Anthony. I'm sorry to take over for a second. There's so much I haven't talked to Gary in so many years and stuff. How was it wrestling in an extreme championship wrestling with hardcore matches? I mean, was that something you really enjoyed? I know it probably came natural to you, no matter what style you wrestled. But did you enjoy that style of wrestling at that particular time, which was totally different than any other product that was out there from WWF or WCW at the time? You know, I mean, you guys really broke the mold on a new product. And how'd you feel, or how'd you enjoy actually doing extreme, you know, hardcore wrestling?
It was great, because I remember when we did the one night stand, and I remember all the WWF guys were up in the balcony watching our show in their building. And they looked around and they knew they couldn't follow us, bro. There's no freaking way.
I remember that night. I was at Manhattan Center, and I think Billy Blanks was there from WWF, one of the writers. And I think even it might have been Triple H. I forget. That whole second floor balcony was all WWF guys, just like an amazement.
JBL was there. I think JBL and Bischoff were there.
Yeah,
and they couldn't lace our boots that night. They looked at us and said, "There's no fucking way we can work like this every night." Well, guess what happened? The attitude error happened, and Vince McMahon changed all that shit up. And because of us, those guys had to start working their asses off like we were. I mean, I'm not going to lie. We would work two nights, three nights a week, and we were fucking sore, man, going through tables and doing that shit. And, you know, we didn't have no padding around the ring. Our ring was concrete, you know, and we're flying off the ropes. I mean, you've seen the shit Sabu and Rob Van Dam and New Jack would do. I mean, come on, it was off the charts, man. And our bodies couldn't handle. I mean, I'd be home on Monday relaxing, or if I felt good enough, I would make it to the gym. You know, so we got to train all week and just wrestle on the weekend, you know. But we changed the business, period. I don't care what anybody says. And, like I said, you know, WCW was on our door, you know, straight up. You're coming in. We're bringing you in December pay-per-view, putting you against the Steiners, and we're strapping you boys up right off the bat. You know, so there's another – that was said, you know. I had Kevin Sullivan call me up, Diamond Dallas Page, Bischoff, Raven was on the phone, and Terry Taylor. All five of them called me and said, "We're bringing you guys in, and we're putting the belts on you. What do you think?" I said, "Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't like to come in and get the straps, because there's no other way to go but downhill." And he's like, "Nah, that's not how it's going to go." He's like, "We're going to actually let you guys hold them for a while." You know, they were tired of the Steiners at that point. And they were like, "Okay, we're down." And I don't know, the following week, I remember calling Bischoff to get my ticket information to go to Atlanta. And he's like, "Vince McMahon bought ECW and WCW. I can't sign no new talent." And that sucked, because we had a 3-year deal already ready right there on the table. And that pretty much screwed us.
At that point when ECW had their pay-per-view event at the Manhattan Center, that was really a big change in the business, because I think, you know, as you said, that's when the Attitude Era started. WWF and WCW were competing against each other for quote unquote major character stars. And here it is, you know, I don't want to say a group of nobodies, but a group of, you know, wrestlers that really gave it 2,000%. And I know for a fact they were in awe that night. Like, you know, we're doing the wrong thing, trying to go after each other's company. And that really led to WWF, you know, just making that deal with WCW and behind everyone's back, you know. You know, I know the guys, a lot of guys didn't know about the whole ECW deal, what took place. But, you know, next thing you know, ECW is almost done and Paul Heyman's on WWF TV and the company's still sort of around. You know, so I know a lot of people were shocked, yeah. But to be honest with you, I don't think WWE.
We were shocked. Yeah, we were like, we already gave Paul Heyman, like we gave him our 2-week notice. So he already knew we were going to WCW. Honestly, me and Anthony actually hung out the longest before, because you got to remember, Raven, he went earlier. I was going to go with Raven and be in the flock, you know. But at the time, it was like everybody was leaving Paul at the same time. So Perry Saturn actually took my spot and went. So we stayed with Paul pretty long, you know. And then around 96 is when we were like, all right, we got to go.
And a lot of guys never left ECW because they were loyal to ECW. I mean, that's where a lot of guys got their stardom from, and they were loyal there, you know, from day one, and didn't want to jump ship. I remember specifically Mike Awesome at one time when he had jumped ship. That was a big thing in ECW that, you know, traitor, you know what I'm saying? I mean, leaving the family, you know, because you guys were basically a family. The majority of guys got along, there were always attitudes, but it was a family. It was a group of guys that really believed in what Todd and Paul were putting out there. You know, they believed in the company.
Yeah, you're never gonna see a locker room like that, dude. It was pretty crazy. My locker room was crazy. And what was good is we were not only were we working together, we were working to make each other better. Like we would watch every match. And you knew if you were okay, if you were main event that night, you knew you had to be the best fucking match that night. I don't give a fuck what the fuck you had to do. I don't care what we had to do. We had to get the biggest pop or we failed. That's how we thought. So no matter how and what was going on, anytime somebody was in the ring wrestling, everybody was sitting around that monitor watching and, you know, giving him props, and, you know, when he came back, we were just like, great match. And, you know, the guy on deck knows I have to not only follow it, I got to beat it. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. And that's how our attitude was. You know, our attitude was that way.
Wanted to go down a personal lane, and this is something that has been out there for at least the last 20-some-odd years. I don't know if it's a touchy situation, you want to talk about it. There was a point in ECW where you had a match with Shane Douglas. And, you know, there was a whole thing there where you legitimately broke your neck during a match, and you didn't even fucking realize that you broke your neck from what I've seen and heard. And, you know, up today, you know, some people say it was a shoot, some people say it was an accident. Do you mind? Is that too touchy of a situation, or do you mind addressing that whole issue?
No, it was. I mean, Shane Douglas says it his way, and it's partly true, you know, and I say it my way. But what happened was he was in a crazy match. He got knocked out in that match. The way I took the bump wrong, but he also fell wrong. You know what I mean? So there's like a couple things that were involved in that. It was a complete mess. But personally, if I would have took the bump the correct way, I probably wouldn't have broke my neck. You know, so I didn't know what happened. I just knew I could roll I was able to move my legs. My toes moved and my fingers moved. That's what I was taught. So that's when I rolled out of the ring real carefully and more or less like went in the back thinking I jammed my neck. I had no idea I broke my neck. I mean, it was like that. This never happened to me. This is new to me. I mean, the Samoans are sitting there cranking on my neck, and they didn't crack nothing. They were being real careful, but they were cranking on it, believe it or not.
And, right.
You know, so at that point, I'm all pain gimmicked up, you know. I go home, you know, and I'm like, man, my neck's pretty fucked up, you know. I'm like, I never felt like this. So come Sunday night, I stopped taking pain meds. So I woke up Monday in a lot of pain, in a lot of pain. So usually on Mondays, Raven, Pitbull, Sandman, and a couple other guys, we would go see our chiropractor. And we've seen the same chiropractor for 30-some-odd years. And I remember I went to his office in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And as soon as I walked in, he looked at me and said, what the fuck's wrong? I'm like, I don't know, man. My neck's fucked up. I said, it doesn't feel right. So he looked at me and said, did you piss your pants or something? I go, no. I said, no, I didn't do that. He's like, well, here's an X. Go right now to Jefferson Hospital and get them to give you a CAT scan right fucking now. Because my X-ray machine, he was moving offices and wasn't there. So I remember we left, I jumped in my car, and I drove to the hospital, man, and my neck was fucked up. Could barely turn my neck at that point. So I walked in the fucking place, and I said, I'm here to get an MRI on my neck. And she looked at it and said, all right, come on in, and next thing you know, they had me strapped down. And I'm like, what's going on? You know, they're like, oh, you broke your neck. I said, nah, fuck out of here. I said, you break your neck, you die. You know, they go, well, why do you think your neck and traps are so tight? They protected you. And I'm like, I don't understand. So I said, can I get up and piss? And they're like, no, you're not moving. And then that's when I was like, oh, shit, something's really wrong. So they just put me in a room, and I remember Todd Gordon. And the next day is when the 8-10 doctors came in. And they're all scratching their heads. They're like, you broke C1 vertebrae. How do you being alive and sitting here eating to us is one out of a million? We don't understand. Because they're just looking at me. So they finally figured, I mean, the doctor straight up said, due to the fact that you started training young and you got your traps so big and that saved your life. When you broke your neck, that muscle went, boom, super tight. So the disc didn't move. It just cracked completely in half and didn't shift at all because my muscle saved me. That's what saved me. That was the only thing. And he told me, they're like, yo, we're going to put a halo on you. I said, fuck, you are, man. I said, you ain't putting no halo on me. I've seen people walking around with that shit. I said, uh-uh. I go, in your skull. He's like, yeah. I said, no fucking way. They go, well, you have to sign a release. And I remember Todd Gordon was like, man, you just got to fucking sign it, dude. You can't sign that release and leave here. And I just said, well, they put me in a hallway, and a little 14-year-old kid got pushed by me. He was in a car accident. He had a halo on. So that's when I told the doc. I said, all right, because I knew they were fucking with my head. So I just said, all right, give me a fucking shot of Demerol so it relaxes me a little bit, and let's go get this done. Because they put this on you when you're awake. You're not asleep. And they drill each bolt 6 pounds of pressure in your skull. So when it's all said and done, you got 24 pounds actually squeezing your head.
Wow.
Now,
I just saw
a video about a week later after, you know, the injury happened. Is it true Shane Douglas, in the middle of the ring, dragged you around by the halo?
Oh, dude, that's the biggest way to see ECW ever seen. People jumped the guardrail. Okay, and you got to remember, these guys didn't want to do this angle. I'm the one that pushed the angle because it's my neck. I asked the doc, when can I come back? He's like, 6 months. I waited 8 months because we wanted to build the angle more. When I first brought it to their attention, they said no because they were afraid that I'm going to sue the company and I was going to own the company and all this bullshit. I wasn't about that. You know, they're my family. I'm not going to take them out of business if I fucked up. You know, so I said, since I got a broken neck, let's fucking do an angle. You know, and I'm telling you, I mean, I had the mafia calling Shane Douglas's house, dude. He called me up crying. You're like, people are calling my house, they're going to kill me and all this shit. I'm like, dude, relax. I said, relax. I said, just start cutting these promos. I said, and make sure they're fucking vicious, you know, like, you got to really break my balls about being fucking crippled and having a broken neck. I said, you can't hold back. You know, Francine did not feel comfortable doing it, but once they started rolling, you noticed they got comfortable because they got better and better and better, and the angles just got better and better. But for that, for people to jump over the guardrail, which never, ever happened at the arena until we did it, That's called white heat. That's the best heat you could possibly have in the business, and
yep.
not many people have ever had that.
And are there any hard feelings towards Shane after that moment?
Nah. I've wrestled Shane 100 times since then, or 1,000 times since then. People still book us to this day against each other, and we do dog collar matches to this day.
Now I know we have a couple of minutes left, so I got two more questions for you, and then we're gonna wrap it up. We have about 8 minutes at the end of the show. So I will fast forward 17 years to the date the incidents with Shane Douglas. You and your partner Pitbull Rex are inducted into the Hardcore Hall of Fame at the 2300 Arena, and now you're joining some of the great hardcore wrestlers: Rocco Rock, Terry Funk, Johnny Grunge, Sabu, Jerry Lynn. And what was that moment like, knowing that you and your tag team partner were now solidified as two of the greatest hardcore wrestlers of all time?
I really wish Anthony was around to see that, because he would have been really proud of that. And we were honored that they actually put us in. You know, we got in with Too Cold Scorpio that night. I think the Blue Meanie was in that night. But just being up there with those guys, you know, nothing feels better than that. I don't care what anybody says. Because we're in that building forever, and nobody can ever take us down, and they never will.
Well, it does seem like a great honor to be a part of. And you actually inducted, if I'm correct, Johnny Grunge into that Hall of Fame.
Yes, absolutely. He was my very, very close friend. Him and Teddy both were.
Oh, wow. So that's got to be a great honor to induct somebody and then get inducted yourself. But, you know, now that was 17 years to the date after that was 2014. Now,
yes.
It's 2021. You know, can we see you getting involved with the NAWA right now? Is that a possibility? Is that on the table?
Let me stop you there, co-host. Let me make it official. I mean, the door has always been open, you know, for the Pitbulls, for Gary to come on board. We haven't seen each other in years. There's always special love for him. And I'll tell you, I mean, I could see Gary, you know, if he's willing to, you know, be booked on the show. But to be honest with you, I can see Gary actually, with his experience and knowledge, work something maybe with management. And I think maybe we need to have a future phone call about actually, you know, come on board with the NAWA and make that your final home in the business for as long as you want to stay into it. So, you know, the door is open right now, and I'll ask you right now. And if you're interested, get in touch with me, and either as a wrestler or as part of management. I would be honored to have your experience and knowledge on board with our company. And I'll throw it to you, not for an answer now, but the door is open to you.
I appreciate that, Tony. You were always a nice guy, and you didn't bullshit nobody. You always kept your word, and that's one thing that's a shame, you know. They just don't make people like you no more, brother.
Well, a lot of people tell me that I'm too old school, but you know what? It's old school wrestling that we all grew up on, and that's what made wrestling. You talked about it earlier tonight about the difference in wrestling from back then to now. And I don't care where you came from, and especially I have special love in my heart for what I call the East Coast guys.
Let me ask these fans that are listening. Do you want to go watch two guys fight, or do you want to watch two guys do gymnastics and flips and flops? What do you want to watch? You know what I mean? I want to watch two guys fight.
Can't say that any better. It's 100% true.
I'm telling you, I want the excitement, and this was my whole philosophy with the relaunch. You know, everyone's like, oh, you lost your shirt in the Daytona Beach. They missed the concept. We were making a debut remark into the business, and you're not going to do that by going to the little UFW hall or whatever. So we did the show. We did great on pay-per-view, and we had some of the best talent out there. But there was something always about that East Coast talent, you know. I mean, guys like Danny Inferno, Bull James, Judas Young, you know, Devin Storm out of Jersey, all these guys from, Jersey. And if you remember, Vince is, WWF is located 20 minutes from my office, and all the guys used to live pretty much in the tri-state area, either in Connecticut, or Morales was in Jersey, SD was in the Bronx, or the old country. It was all East Coast, and there's nothing like...
Just so people know, the Pitbulls, at one time, the Pitbulls ruled the East Coast. We had it all. When we're doing 2 and 3 shows in one night, come on, bro.
Yeah, those are the days. Those were the days. If you remember those double shots in the afternoon, you're doing a 2 o'clock show on a Saturday, and then you're running to another arena 2 hours away for a 7 o'clock show. I mean, that was the business back then. And, these guys go in there
wonderful
now. It's like 50-50 high spots, and they call it wrestling. I do not believe it's wrestling. To me, I still say it's backdoor wrestling that changed around 2005, where everybody and their mother just got into the business because they wanted to be a wrestler. But to me, a wrestler was those big fucking burly guys that, just knew how to cut promos. They're doing the psychology, and they say it's gone. And I do not believe it's gone. I just believe that the whole character image of the business has changed. But I believe in my heart that the people want that. They're not really just interested in the product. You look at it nowadays, too. If you look at WWF, or even recently, I'll go even recently with AEW. They were that thing. They got so many problems. Why? Because they were
an angle. I mean, back in our day, our angles would last 8, 9, 10, 11 months.
Exactly.
Down here nowadays, it's, I'm not going to lie, 1 week, and then it's to the next thing.
Back in the days, I used to say that the wrestler used to carry the belt. Now it's the belt carrying the wrestler because they don't have it. They don't have it. So back in the days, when you carry the belt, it was the wrestler's persona, that bigger-than-life character. I always go back to, for example, Ultimate Warrior, back in those days. When his music hit, you knew what you were getting. You were getting these guys with these armbands coming out, running down
the
ring.
It was an honor being on the show, guys.
Not no more. It's not there anymore. It's not. But in closing on my end, like I said, the door is open. You've known me for years, and either as a wrestler or even behind the scene management, the door is open. I could use someone like your talent involved in our company, and we'll talk about it in the near future. With that, and if you want to just have any final saves and have Gary just finish up, and we'll take it home for our first episode of our new season.
Yeah, of course. For me, it would be an honor to call one of Gary Wolf's matches. Seeing him wrestle, I wasn't alive for any of it, but I could watch everything online. So be able to call one of his matches would be something crazy. So, hopefully he walks through that door. Unfortunately, it does look like our time is up for tonight. We'd like to thank everyone who is tuned in tonight to the NAWA's Wrestling Connection. And as always, you can like the Wrestling Connection on Facebook at the NAWA Wrestling Connection. You can follow Tony Capone on Twitter at Tony Capone NAWA and me, Tony T, on Twitter at @A_Tornatore. Also, make sure to follow the NAWA on Twitter at @NAWA_wrestling. We will be live next week, Tuesday, February 2nd at 8 p.m., again for another edition of the Wrestling Connection. And once again, we'd like to thank Pitbull Gary Wolf for joining us this week. It was a pleasure to hear some of those stories. You usually don't hear that on a daily basis. Lastly, for the godfather of professional wrestling, Tony Capone, and for myself, Tony T, not saying goodbye, but so long until next time. Everybody have a good week and stay safe.
God bless, man. Talk to you soon. Thank you, Gary. Appreciate your time, my man.